This episode of the Side Hustle Project is brought to you by FreshBooks, cloud accounting and invoicing software for freelancers, solopreneurs, and side hustlers. I've personally used FreshBooks as my go-to invoicing software since day one with my freelance business, even back when I was freelancing on the side of my day job. And as my business has grown over the years, so has FreshBooks. You can now create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds, accept online payments from your clients, and much, much more. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to listeners of The Side Hustle Project. To claim your free trial, just go to freshbooks.com/Ryan and enter The Side Hustle Project in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. Throughout this first season, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Pat Flynn, the owner of Smart Passive Income, one of the world's most popular blogs and podcasts about running an online business. He's also the Wall Street Journal bestseller of Will It Fly, his book that's designed to teach you how to test your business idea so you don't waste time and money. Pat is famous for his monthly income reports, where he breaks down every source of revenue for his online business each month, which is typically between $100,000 to $200,000 a month. In today's episode, we're digging into Pat's very non-linear career trajectory that eventually landed him in his first online business, teaching people how to pass an architecture exam, which became his first six-figure company. We're talking about his personal process for validating the idea for both his blog, Smart Passive Income, and the courses he launches to his audience there. Pat shares about his first big break and offers up advice for how to go about getting your first paying customers. All this and much, much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Pat Flynn. First things first, can you take us back to the beginning and talk a little bit about what you did before starting SPI and how you sort of got into online business in the first place?
Yeah, so I actually was set out to be an architect. I thought I was going to be an architect for the rest of my life. I actually graduated from UC Berkeley with a degree in architecture in 2005, and I worked in the industry for a few years until 2008 when I got let go. And it was a really big blow to me because I really was dreaming of becoming my own principal of a firm one day and that sort of thing. So I really was scrambling to try and figure out what else I could do. And luckily, I came across a podcast called Internet Business Mastery, where I heard an interview about a guy who was making six figures a year helping people pass the project management exam. And that was my light bulb moment because I had taken a number of exams as an architect, and I figured, maybe I can business online to help people pass this one particular exam that I had taken called the LEED exam that was very difficult and help people pass that exam, and maybe I could turn it into a business. Well, to make a long story short, after a year, that business, after publishing study guides and creating a blog and just writing about it, building an audience, becoming an expert in it in the eyes of an audience, it made over six figures. I actually made over $200,000 in a year after I started monetizing it. And it just was a huge blessing. And also a lot of people were asking me how I was able to do that. Now, the interesting thing is I just was kind of figuring things out along the way. That's why I call myself now the crash test dummy, because it was really how I started. And that's what I really feel like a validating idea is all about, and what online business is about, you know, trying something, and if it doesn't work, keep going, but making sure to use the right research behind it to make sure you don't crash as often as you might. From there, I started smartpassiveincome.com to share everything and anything that was going on, including how much money I was making and where it was coming from. And that business has grown quite large, and I have an amazing, huge following, and I'm truly blessed about that. Like you said, I wrote a Wall Street Journal bestselling book recently. I speak internationally around the world. I'm the host of a podcast of the same name, Smart Passive Income, that just passed 35 million downloads, and it's just incredible. And beyond that, I feel very lucky because I'm able to do this all out of my home office here in San Diego, California, and be at home with my kids and I typically work when they're not around, meaning they're at school or they're sleeping. So they're around, but they're just, you know, sleeping. So I truly, absolutely love the way that I've been able to sort of design my life, and I want to help others design their lives in the way that they would want it as well. And I truly feel like online business is the way to go to help create that flexible schedule that one might need to do that. And it all starts with validating an idea, which is why I wrote that book, Will It Fly? That was the number one question people had with me when I was building my business. Was, you know, well, how did you know it was going to work? And that's, I guess, why we're here talking today.
That's exactly why we're here. So when you started with Smart Passive Income, how did you go about validating the idea for your site? And then what did your sort of proof of concept, like the rough version of your site, look like when it first came online?
Oh, God. There's a post online. You maybe might be able to link to it, but it shows really the first draft. It was public though, but it was just the first iteration of Smart Passive Income. It was using a WordPress blogging platform called Thesis, and it was just the default sort of plain Jane theme. And it had a few articles on there, and it's ugly. But I put it out there for everybody to see because I want to show you that, you know, it was sort of the MVP, right? Just, can I actually get a site up there, and is this something I can actually write about? That's the first step. And yes, it was something I was very excited to write about, which is good, because if I wasn't, then I would have just stopped, which is good. I actually made the mistake later of trying to start a business with my wife. And this was a blog, again, where it was going to be sort of a husband-wife duo blog with, you know, a topic every week or every day that we would then both write about. And you'd get the female side from my wife and then the male side from me. And it was this great idea. And we had all these topics that we were going to talk about. We actually spent about $1,500 on a blog theme to have the side-by-side thing. And it was beautiful. It looked great. Then we started writing and we started getting fights. And then we were like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is dumb. Like, let's stop. Let's not do it. And I was just heartbroken because if we had done that first, we would have realized that this was a dumb idea for us, and we wouldn't have wasted all that money and all that time. And then to think of what else we could have put our energy into instead, well, it just makes me cringe. But that was a good lesson. With Smart Passive Income, you know, it was that first sort of draft with a very basic blog theme just to make sure that that was something I wanted to do. And then I gave it a couple months just to see if this was something other people were interested in. So I shared it with a couple of my coworkers or my ex-coworkers and just started to share it in forums and other places where I knew other people were talking about similar things. And people started to really, you know, enjoy it and really like it. And that really gave me the sign to keep going with it. And so, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times especially with blogging, you know, you got to be consistent with your blogging. You got to keep creating great content. And there were moments every 6 months or so where I just felt like giving up, where I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't remember why I was doing it in the first place. I wasn't making money, or actually I wasn't even trying to make money with Smart Passive Income at first. My other business was going so well. However, when things were at that moment when I just didn't want to do it anymore, I would often write a blog post that was sort of different than everything else and just start to try and test new things and try different avenues. One thing that actually worked out really well for me was my income reports. So I started sharing my income report, meaning how much money I was making from my other business, where it was all coming from, and then any other new businesses I created, I ended up putting those line items in there as well. And people really, really resonated with that. And so I just kept those going. That was, again, another test and a sign to me that, well, people wanted even more in-depth information. So I started to then create these amazingly detailed tutorial posts. I wrote a 10 blog post series that was all about how to write an ebook. And I got really detailed with it, and people loved it. And that then turned into an ebook that I gave away for free in exchange for an email address. And that book still is available today at ebooksthesmartway.com. And it has been downloaded over 200,000 times. So that gave me a good signal that, hey, people want more from me. And now I'm at the point where courses are coming out. You know, and now I'm recommending products as an affiliate and all those kinds of things. So that's kind of where it started. And that was with SPI, the sort of journey into validation.
So what would you say was actually your first big break with the site? And then what do you think the biggest determinants of that success was?
Yeah, well, I remember specifically I was featured in a podcast interview with a man named Yaro Starek from Entrepreneur's Journey. And that was my first huge sort of hockey stick portion of my graph, my traffic graph, that really kind of put me on the map. And when I think about how that happened, I remember specifically, I reached out to him And I just started talking to him. I actually offered to interview him, and I actually did interview him first. Now, unfortunately, that interview, and this is a true story, got lost in a hard drive crash. So I had to kind of go to him and be like, I'm sorry I wasted your time. And it was probably a terrible episode anyway, because that was my first one. But he reached out to me and he was like, oh, I'm sorry about that. And I was kind of telling him about what I was doing and my lead exam site and all this stuff. And he got really interested. He's like, oh, I think you'd be a great story on my podcast. I'm like, really? So we recorded that podcast episode, and it was only because we started talking. You know, if I hadn't done that, none of this would have happened. And I think that goes along with, and this is a huge lesson for everybody validating, is relationships are incredibly important. Who you know is really important. And that's one thing I would tell my younger self if I could is, you know, try and meet and talk to and befriend as many people as possible, because you never know, that one person can really be that, quote, Yarrow Stark in your life that can help you do that. Other than that, you know, another important thing that I think about when I started my journey was the one-on-one conversations I had with my audience. So as I was starting out with Smart Passive Income, I knew that it was going to be crucial for me to try and develop, you know, these incredible relationships with my traffic, because that was the advantage I had. When you start out, your advantage is you're able to interact with people more than a bigger brand might. And you'll be able to have these more personal interactions to a point where you can then ask questions. What are you struggling with? What do you need help with? Which then at that time turned into blog posts and tutorials. Now, when I ask people those questions, what do you need help with? What's something that you do every single week that you just dread? Those things become software. Those things become courses. So, you know, it's sort of evolved, but I've always had that one-on-one interaction with my audience. And even now with an email list of over 200,000 people, I'm at the point where one might think, well, I don't have time to do that anymore, to have those one-on-one interactions. And it's true. On the blog, it's almost impossible for me to respond to every comment. On Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere else I'm at, it's nearly impossible to respond to even half of the things that are coming in. However, I make an effort every single month to reach out to 10 people on my email list randomly. And I email them and I ask them to get on the phone with me. If anybody's been watching Gary Vaynerchuk recently, you'll see that he does this a lot himself. He gets on a call and he actually films it on Daily V. But I do this too, because it works. And these conversations, it's really funny because when I reach out, they think it's like an automated email or just fake. But I'm like, no, like, let's get on a call for real. I want to talk to you. And these phone calls that on average last about 10, 15 minutes are very enlightening, because I ask, you know, how are things going? What do they need help with? Why haven't they been taking action like they wanted to? And, you know, I get it really into the psyche of why they're struggling, which helps me create things that are more helpful for them. But some of these conversations go hours, because I don't want to put the phone down, because they're giving me all this golden information. They're spitting out these stories that are just incredible and help me empathize with them even more, which is really important. Empathy is another important aspect of anybody who's building a business or creating a startup. You need to know what your target audience is going through, not just know their age group or if they're male or female or where they're located. I mean, yeah, that stuff's important, but start talking to real people. Who are they? What are their names? What do they like to do? What are their biggest struggles? What's their morning routine? Like, if you can begin to understand your target audience in that way, it's going to be much easier for you to create things that are actually helpful for them. And you're actually going to care more. You're going to put more effort into it. And actually, they're going to help you shape what this thing's becoming too. Because for a lot of the recent courses and things that I've come out with lately, they've been validated first by getting a smaller group of people to go through them at a very MVP level. You know, features stripped out, everything, but just the basic core information in there. Then they tell me what's good and what needs to be in there, so that when I release it openly to the public, then it's going to be exactly what it needs to be and not anything that I'm guessing. It's what they're telling me it should be.
So once you identify who your target audience is, and let's assume you don't personally know very many people that match that description, how do you start identifying some specific people that you can then reach out to and start having these conversations with? How do you find them?
Well, what I love to recommend people do is actually create their what I call the market map. And this is an exercise that anybody can do at any level in their business, whether they're just getting started or they have a business or blog or website already. And that's finding the three P's of your audience. So literally take a spreadsheet and make three columns The first column will be the first P, which is people. And there you actually list out all the people who are already influencers in that space, who have earned the trust of a particular market that you're interested in. So the top Twitter accounts, the top Facebook accounts, who are the admins of the top Facebook groups, who are the owners of those blogs and podcasts, and you know, who are hosting the podcast. List them all out. Those are the influencers who you know are having a relationship already with your target audience. They're going to help you find your target audience. But not only that, those are people you should also be building a relationship with too. Not as competitors, but as potentially partners, JV partners even, if there's some promotion down the road. The second column are going to be the places. So that those are the websites, those are the forums, those are the in-person meetings and conferences, everywhere where your target audience goes. You know, put that list there too. A lot of this will be kind of crossover with the people who own those sites as well. And then finally, the final P in that column is going to be the products. So what products are already being sold to hopefully serve your audience? This doesn't necessarily mean that they're selling, but it just means, well, here's what's already being offered to that audience. And when you have these three P's and you look at them, just that exercise alone, which takes about 30 minutes to do, it's completely eye-opening because it gives you the fourth P and final P, which is your position. Where in that space is there actually a hole? And then you can even dig even deeper and look at those products and, for example, you know, look at the Amazon reviews for those products and find the most popular one and look at the 3-star reviews for that one to start, because the 3-star reviews will give you the most honest ones. Some of them even list out literally, here are the pros, here are the cons. And I love that. It's golden information, because in whatever you end up doing, you want to make sure you include the pros and not include the cons, right? And so you can get some incredible insight from here. But going back to your initial question in terms of the people that you can reach out to, I mean, any of those places, people, or products that you find are places where people are. So you can actually find people there and reach out to them and have a conversation with them there. Probably the easiest thing to do would be to connect with people on social media in those groups, or LinkedIn group is as well as a great one. Maybe reach out to them via DM and just start to have a conversation with them. Again, not selling anything, not even asking for anything except just a little bit of time to start. And then just going from there in terms of, you know, digging deeper and finding potentially that solution that they're all looking for.
Hey guys, this is Ryan. I wanted to highlight what Pat was just talking about when it comes to manually laying the foundation for your community. Don't just immediately pitch people on purchasing your product or hiring you for a service. Just like with dating, you don't ask the person to get married while you're still on the first date. Or at least I hope you don't. While you're just getting started, your community is everything. You won't ever get to the point of having a profitable business if you don't first figure out how to help people overcome their relevant challenges one-on-one in a very manual way first. This is a mistake I see many first-time entrepreneurs make. They come up with their online course idea, spend weeks or months writing a great sales page, shooting hours of video content, then they press publish. But nothing happens. Even if you have an audience, they need to be invested in what you're building. And there has to be clear social proof that your product or service will actually help them. Up next, after this short break from our sponsor, Pat and I talk about how he validates his course ideas and why he still, to this day, takes time out of each week to connect with his readers on the phone. Stay tuned.
This episode of The Side Hustle Project is brought to you by FreshBooks, cloud accounting and invoicing software for freelancers, solopreneurs, and side hustlers. As you know, I personally use FreshBooks to do the invoicing for my freelance business. And the reason why I've stuck with FreshBooks for so long is because I hate dealing with the accounting side of running my business. I'm just not a numbers person, and I'd rather spend my time doing what I do best, which is getting results for my clients. And that's where FreshBooks really comes into play for me. Their completely redesigned suite of tools range from invoice customization to analytics and insights that show when your clients are actually viewing your invoices. The ability to easily take upfront deposits for new projects, accept online payments, and much, much more. Getting started is extremely simple, even if you're not a numbers person. Actually, especially if you're not a numbers person. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to listeners of The Side Hustle Project. To claim your free trial, just go to freshbooks.com/Ryan and enter The Side Hustle Project in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Welcome back to our interview with Pat Flynn. Before the break, Pat was sharing his hands-on tactics for building an initial community around your idea. Now we're talking about how to do that and make meaningful progress with your business while working a full-time job.
Most of our audience is trying to do this while they have a full-time job. So within that context, do you have any particular piece of advice or strategies that have worked for you on validating an idea with extremely limited time resources?
Yeah, I mean, you got to chunk out and block out that time and really commit to it. You got to honor that time that you put in your calendar. So one, put it in your calendar, the time, even if it's 30 minutes or an hour, that's all it takes to start. And you know what? That time starts to add up. And if possible, I would recommend putting that time for yourself in the morning before you do anything else. Well, you can, you know, wake up and brush your teeth and stuff. But I mean, before you give your time to somebody else and their dreams that they're building, you give it to yourself first. This is very much like a personal finance tip that a lot of people may have heard of before. And that is pay yourself first, right? You get a paycheck, put a chunk aside in a savings account, or better yet, you know, a mutual fund or whatever. And then over time, you're going to start to see that thing grow without you even knowing it. The same thing happens with your time. Because what most people try to do is, you know, they set an alarm for when they have to go to work. And they work and they come home. We got to spend time with the family, right? And the family goes down to bed. And then you have like 30 minutes or an hour at the end of the day to work on your thing, but you're already exhausted. You've already used up your think tank and there's just no good decision-making going on. But if you flip it around, wake up a little earlier and you devote that early time to yourself, and you should be waking up for yourself. That's the best time to do personal development. There's been books written on this and science done behind it. And I wake up at 4:30 in the morning and I always read, meditate, and I get my work done before the kids are up. And by golly, this is like the craziest production I've ever had in my life. And so do the same thing. Even if it's a half hour, devote that early day to yourself first. You're going to wake up more motivated. You're going to get stuff done because you know that's the only time you have. And then you're giving your leftover energy to somebody else in the dreams that they're making. So that's what I would recommend. Block out that time. Become somebody who makes it a habit, because when it becomes a habit, it becomes a part of you. And if you're making even a little bit of progress every day, again, like I said, it adds up. So 30 minutes a day for 365 days, I mean, that's a lot of time for you to validate an idea and hopefully have already taken action on it, gotten your first customers, and then you could start building out your product from there with all that new found motivation.
Have you had any validation tests of your own fail over the years?
I mean, there's been ones where I had thought I was working on something. Actually, a couple failure examples. I mean, we could talk all day about that. But there was one where I didn't validate, and things went wrong. I lost about $15,000 in the process. So what happened was I had two guys who were my friends who were both making software, and they both released their software. It was actually WordPress plugins. So WordPress is a blogging platform. Plugins are things that you can sort of just install really quickly to do cool things on your blog. And these guys were doing two separate things, but they were doing them right around the same time. And they launched their WordPress plugins, and one of them made $125,000 in a week. And then the other one made about $98,000 in a week as well after his launch. And it kind of just blew my mind, because I had this large audience of people who used WordPress, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can create a WordPress plugin too. So I found a developer just using a random search, and I said, hey, I want to build this kind of plugin. Go, because I wanted it done fast. And so you could see like these dollar signs coming out of my eyes, which was the first mistake. You never do things just for the money. Do things to serve first, and then the money will come. So that was the first issue. And the second issue was I didn't even flesh out what this idea was going to be. I just knew what I wanted to do. But when it comes to software, especially, you have to be very detailed and wireframe every bit of it. You know, what button goes where and what it all looks like. Because if you don't do that, your developer who you hire is going to fill in those blanks for you. And it's typically not going to be what you had expected. And it definitely wasn't. So what was supposed to take 3 weeks and $3,000 ended up taking 3 months and $15,000 to create. And the crazy thing was, by the time I got to the end of it and I finally had something that I thought was great, that was right around my initial idea, I shared it then with my friends because I wanted to keep it secret. I was teasing it the whole time. I was like, guys, this is gonna be awesome. I'm not gonna tell you about it because you'll see. And then I shared it with them, and the reaction was like, yeah, that's kind of cool. And I was like, no. And if I had only talked to them about that idea first, before paying anybody anything, before researching anything, if I had talked to them about that idea first, I would have gotten a lot of those meh kind of reactions, which then I would be like, well, why that? Like, okay, what would be good about, how can we make this better? You know, and then have those conversations first before having them later. A lot of them actually, when I talked to them about that, they came up with this huge list of ideas that would have made it 1,000 times better. But by then my budget was already exhausted. And so it was a big $15,000 lesson, you know, kicking myself. And then there were other projects where I did do validation and it wasn't what I had expected. And so there's a lot of courses, for example, where it didn't go the way I had expected. But still, lessons learned. And I had done one related to a membership site that I was creating. Membership site being something that, you know, you get members for and they pay a recurring monthly income to get access to content and other things that are helpful. Well, I had built one, a very MVP model to create, and I didn't launch it publicly. I launched it to a beta group to make sure that it was one that people wanted. And what was really cool was that I actually had about 300 customers, which is awesome. And so I worked with them and I was fine-tuning the content, getting ready to open it up. And then I finally realized that I started slowing down my content production because I started to feel like in order to keep people interested every single month, I had to force this content out of myself every month. And in the beginning, it was really easy. I had a huge list of things that I could create. But then in the end, I realized that I was just forcing things. And I just felt like it was a chore to continually produce this content just so people can keep paying every month. And then I finally just, eventually the forums in there died and people just started to kind of leave. And then I actually... a couple of years later, I actually offered everybody a refund because I just was not happy with how that went. And everybody thought I was crazy for doing that. But I really wanted to just have a clean slate and start fresh with the new way that I'm actually producing content and courses, which is specific solutions for specific problems, one-time payment. You know what you're going to get. You pay it once, you get that result. And if they don't, then that's a problem. And that's something I would have to fix instead of a monthly membership, which is like, hey, how do you know if this is actually working for me or not? So I was really happy with the lessons learned there. And that just showed me that, you know, the membership model was not one that I wanted to work with. And, you know, it took a time of doing it in order for me to understand that.
So with some of your validation tests or even full-on products you've built that didn't go as expected, what are some of the signs or determinants you look for when deciding to either throw in the towel on one hand or pivot, change, and improve it for that same audience, that same problem? How do you make that decision?
Well, a lot of times validation first has to happen in yourself. I think this is a thing that a lot of people would skip over. I don't know if anybody else in the course have said anything about this, but for me, the most important part of validation is part one of my book, which is self-validation. Does this idea or thing that you're working on actually align with you, with your goals, with the future that you want, with your strengths and those things that you're really interested in doing? Because I know a lot of entrepreneurs who are really successful on paper. They have many employees. They're millionaires. However, they're still unhappy because they're in a business that they're not excited about. They only took that business and ran with it because it was the first opportunity that came by and they were worried that maybe there wasn't going to be another one. And so they picked that low-hanging fruit, but it just didn't taste very well after a while. And so, validating it with yourself first is going to be really important. So if you're at a point where you're validating something that just doesn't feel right, you really have to ask yourself why and then check in with, well, where do you want to go? And does this actually align with that? And if it doesn't really matter how it's helping other people. If you aren't in it, it's not going to be serving that audience in the best way possible, at which point you would then either decide to shift into something that would then work out or hand that off to somebody else who can serve that audience in the way that you've started it and then focus on something else. So again, it all starts internally. But beyond that, in terms of if it doesn't work out with your audience that you're testing with, here's the best thing about that. Hopefully you've done it in a sort of iterative process where you've sort of had checks and balances with yourself along the way to a point where maybe you got customers. And then if they're not happy with it and you validated that that's not what it should be, that's not the end. That's actually the beginning, because you can then reach out to them and ask them questions. That's the beauty of validation, is you're working with it's sort of like a litmus test. You're working with a small petri dish of people. And then if they aren't happy, you ask that petri dish, like, hey, what's going on here? Why didn't it work out? It kind of worked for you up to this point, but something happened here. Can you explain and tell me why you feel this way? Or what do you think would make this even better? That way you're getting real feedback from real customers who are going to then tell you what went wrong, so that when you actually share this thing outside of that petri dish and with the world, it's going to be something that's actually, you know, better in the way that it should be. So that's again the beauty of testing. You are creating this sort of controlled environment to get wild with and get excited about, and then also break things a little bit so it doesn't break the entire thing. It just breaks that little thing, and then once you fix it and roll with it and then validate it again, once it proves itself, then you go big and go wide.
All right, Pat. So this is our last question for you. When it comes to validating an idea, what would you say has been the best investment that you've ever made? And that investment could be financial, it could be products, services, tools, could be a time investment, energy, otherwise.
To me, the best thing that you can do in the realm of validation is talk to people. And whenever I've been able to connect with people in person, it's just done wonders in terms of having the ability to really research and understand a person and what they need help with and just to vet ideas off of. So I would say that if you have a little bit of cash and you're looking to get into business, fly somewhere where there's a lot of those people if you can. So I would say like a conference or anywhere, you know, conference would actually be great because then in your people list, you probably have some of those people who you can then reach out to and connect with and get involved with, maybe even serve them in some way as like a freelancer to kind of just insert your way into that world and then start to discover all these relationships and the people and the holes and the problems that you could potentially solve in there. I think freelancing is a great first step for people who want to get in any business because then you can start to understand who is in there and what needs help. But yeah, I mean, talking to people, reaching out to them, I think putting in yourself in a place where there's a lot of people like a conference would be great. And so investing a little bit of time and money to do that can kind of give you 10, 100 times return. So, because that's where it all starts, right? Like the time is over to start building stuff we think is going to work and then putting it out there and shouting from the rooftops and kind of not getting a response. You know, you shouldn't ever get a response anymore if you're shouting from a rooftop. If you're shouting from the rooftop, you're going to be saying not, hey, here's my new product, buy my thing, but it's, hey, here's the thing that you all helped me build. Like now's the time to get it. And so that's the approach that we should take.
I love that. Pat, thanks for joining us. Can you share with where our audience can learn more about you? What's coming up next?
Yeah, absolutely. So smartpassiveincome.com is the place to go. All my stuff's related there. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram, pretty active at Pat Flynn.
Awesome. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. And one more thing before you go. I want to give a special thanks again to FreshBooks, our sponsor for this episode of the Side Hustle Project, for making this possible. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial of their cloud accounting and invoicing software to listeners of the Side Hustle Project. To claim your free trial, just go to freshbooks.com/Ryan and enter the Side Hustle Project in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Thanks for tuning in.